Welcome to Field Notes, a recurring segment on the Old Mole Variety Hour that collects reports from on-the-ground social movements, past and present. I'm Sophie Smith. Today, we're heading into the national forest lands that lie to the east of the Cascades Range to look at a multi-decades grassroots effort to defend precious wild ecosystems against commercial logging and environmental degradation. The Blue Mounds Biodiversity Project has been working since 1991 to challenge timber sales, as well as road building, livestock grazing, herbicide and biocide use, and mining on federal lands in eastern Oregon and southeastern Washington. The work of forest defense is ever more vital as anthropogenic climate change radically alters our weather patterns, our ecosystems, and our communities, and the extraction industries and military-industrial complex that drives it continue to emit fossil fuels at a record pace. Forests, particularly mature and old growth, are what experts term natural climate solutions. However, at least 96% of all primary forests in the United States have been logged since the colonization of the continent, and the majority of those that remain are concentrated on federal lands that remain largely unprotected from expansive commercial logging operations. All told, logging causes 10 times the carbon emissions of wildfires, though it's almost never mentioned by federal environmental policymakers. What's more, logging has been shown to significantly increase the frequency, size, and scope of climate change-fueled forest fire. As we head into the summer in the Pacific Northwest, the concerted defense of these vital ecosystems is more important than ever. Today, I'll speak with Karen Coulter, director and co-founder of the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project, BMBP. Karen has been fighting to defend and restore forests on public lands in eastern Oregon for over 30 years. She's been surveying timber sales every summer since BMBP's inception to gather critical ecological information that's built countless successful legal cases that have stopped or significantly reduced logging and other environmental harms on these public lands. Karen's trained over 300 volunteers in forest ecology and activist skills, including me, and she gives regular workshops on everything from field survey work to fighting corporate rule. Karen's dedicated her life to environmental and social justice causes, and she's an incredible comrade, mentor, and dear friend. Welcome to Field Notes, Karen. I'm so happy to have the chance to speak with you about forest defense on this Earth Day.
Well, I'm very happy to be working with you, Sophie. You're a fabulous activist in person, too.
Well, I wanted to start by talking a little bit about climate change and large trees. As we all know, we're facing an unprecedented climate emergency that environmentalists have been sounding the alarm on for decades, including many people like you, who are some of the first defenders of old growth forests here in the Pacific Northwest. Can you talk a little bit about the critical ecological role of ancient trees, ancient forests, in fighting climate change?
Well, the most important part about ancient forest is the size of the trees. When the trees become old growth, they tend to be much larger or very big, and large or big trees sequester and store the most carbon as a natural carbon sink. And the importance of this is that, for instance, James Hansen, the climate scientist, has noted that even if we stopped all our fossil fuel use, if we didn't preserve our carbon sinks, our natural carbon sinks of the oceans and the forests, we would still be pretty doomed, because we need to preserve those sinks in order for everything to balance and to reduce climate change. Old trees also maximize carbon sequestration and storage for up to centuries. From the time they're a live tree, and a live old growth tree could last for centuries, then they become a snag, which stores the carbon longer for decades. And then the snag becomes a log, if these trees are not logged, that stores carbon in the soils. So it's incredibly important to keep our forest preserved.
Right. And when a forest is cut, it's not just the carbon emissions from all that heavy equipment or building roads that causes those emissions in logging, but actually releases that carbon into the air. It's something like 10 to 15% is stored in timber products. And a lot of the industry response is, well, we replant, but trees have to get to about 80 years old before they're really that efficient in storing carbon. And so replanting just really can't keep up the pace. I always like saying that this is an ancient technology, right? A carbon sink form of carbon capture that requires no new invention. It just requires defense, protection, and allowing for growth.
The biggest source of carbon dioxide emissions in Oregon is commercial logging.
Given the importance of these vital forest ecosystems for our climate future, one would think that the Forest Service would be working very hard to protect ancient, old growth, mature forests from logging. However, as I found as a volunteer with Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project for the last 10 years, the Forest Service is actually consistently proposing and carrying out numerous commercial timber sales on public lands every single year, many of which aim to target large trees. Can you talk a little bit about the context of logging on public lands in Eastern Oregon? What kind of commercial timber sales are you seeing? What are some of the trends? And what is the role of the Forest Service as what we think of as the stewards of these vital habitats in pushing these sales through?
Well, when we first started field surveying proposed timber sales in Eastern Oregon in the early 1990s, the timber sales averaged about 2,000 to 6,000 acres of commercial logging, with what was then somewhat legitimately called commercial thinning, with some exceptions of clear cutting in the wetter Umatilla National Forest. However, the current Forest Service trend in Eastern Oregon is to commercially log up to 25,000 to 100,000 acres in one timber sale, with increasing logging intensity to the point of actual clear cutting, which they had abandoned in Eastern Oregon because it didn't regenerate well in the dry forest. And also, they're now on a logging rotation of returning to the past timber sale areas within 30 years or at about 30 years or less, which is completely unsustainable ecologically, culturally, and economically. Soils can have detrimental long-term soil impacts from logging of up to 40 to 70 years. So that's a very long time for these soils to be non-productive. In Germany, with silvicultural practices that are now used by the Forest Service, trees could no longer grow as large as they used to because of these practices of logging on short rotations in particular. When the national forests were first designated as such, they were called forest reserves, with the goal of protecting these forests from rampant, uncontrolled corporate logging at that time. The Forest Service doesn't really talk about that anymore. These national forests were indigenous people's lands, which indigenous people respected as part of their spiritual beliefs and cultural practices. Under Gifford Pinchot being in charge of the national forest, Pinchot changed forests conceptually to being crops that should be harvested on a regular basis, which is not how forests evolved or how they function as a natural ecosystem.
Many will kind of demonize the timber industry or point the finger there in terms of why is it that forests are being so heavily logged, but it's, I think, important to understand the really central role of the Forest Service in designing and proposing these commercial logging projects, many of which are kind of cloaked in this language of a commercial timber sale will be called a vegetation treatment or forest management or be a measure of fuel reduction. But then you look at it and it's virtually a clear cut, or even there's been projects I've surveyed that are called restoration projects that are commercial logging projects. And so they almost never say logging on their proposed timber sales. And it really is a disservice to the public in being able to understand what's happening and weigh in. But one of the advantages of the Forest Service being so involved is that it is a public agency and we are supposed to have a voice in what they do. And that's definitely a big part of the BMBP's specific strategy for defending the forest. So could you talk a little bit about how BMBP goes about its work pursuing forest defense, what the point of intervention is with the Forest Service, and what some of the results have been?
Yeah, both of the co-founders of Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project came from backgrounds of direct action to protect the national forests. However, when we moved to Eastern Oregon, it was obvious that direct action was not going to be effective due to huge timber sales with multiple roads and a mostly very right-wing local public and long distances from media outlets and potential supporters. So instead, we learned from scratch how to legally defend the forest through field surveying, writing comments and objections to proposed timber sales, and determining which timber sales could be negotiated with the Forest Service and which sales had good claims and could be litigated. And I want to note that we had to start from scratch. We had to learn the science of the ecology of Eastern Oregon forests. We had to learn the environmental laws, and we'd borrow other groups' appeals. At that time, it was appeals rather than objections. And we would literally cut and paste. This was before widespread use of personal computers. And nonetheless, our organization continued to grow, and we have a fairly good track record of significantly modifying or stopping timber sales compared to other environmental organizations. I attribute our relative success to field surveying, which is the backbone of all our work, because it informs our comments and our objections through evidence from the ground, from field surveying, and maintains our passion to fight the sale because we camp in the proposed timber sales from weeks to months to even recurrent summer seasons for the biggest sales. This way, we're not necessarily believing whatever the Forest Service says in their timber sale environmental assessments or environmental impact statements as we're gathering evidence of the existing conditions. We are more passionate about doing everything we can to stop or modify a timber sale because we get to know the forest area, we see the wildlife, and we get attached to our vivid memories from living there and interacting with the plants, the forests, and the wild animals. We have community in the forest. Over the last 33 years, we've had hundreds of volunteers out in the forest and have stopped tens of thousands of acres of commercial logging and modified tens of thousands of acres more, often getting never logged areas dropped, steep slope logging dropped, riparian area logging dropped, and protection for old growth and large trees. We haven't kept records of exactly how much forest we've saved, but it's important to recognize that the Forest Service victories that we have are always temporary. In other words, we can win in court on a particular timber sale and stop it or significantly modify it, and they can just come back again to it and log more. So it's very important to realize that we need national policy changes.
Yeah, I think the work of Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project is this really special, kind of powerful combination of on the ground field work, spending time in threatened forests, and then also doing this work within the system, but not just simply working within the system in a pacified way, but suing the system or threatening legal action to force the system to shift or compromise on these given sales. So it's a really savvy approach that really combines these different points of intervention in a unique way. In terms of specific legal protections that BMBP has advanced for large trees, I wanted to talk for a moment about what's known as the 21-inch rule, which I was hoping you could explain the origins of the rule, what 21-inch DBH refers to, and some of the recent federal attempts to overturn it and the kind of provisional victory that we're seeing in terms of reinstating this protection for large trees.
We provided legal standing as plaintiffs for the Natural Resources Defense Council in 1995 for their threatened litigation over the Blue Mountains National Forest having outdated forest plans. The National Forest Management Act requires that forest plans be revised every 10 to 15 years. The outcome of NRDC's negotiations was to require a 21-inch diameter limit, and that's a diameter breast height, 4 feet, 6 inches high on the tree.
So anything less than 21 inches breast height was off limits, right?
Yeah. And the 21-inch limit was based on ponderosa pine generally being old growth or 150 years to be designated as old growth by that size, the 21 inches. And that's where that 21 inch figure came from. The 21 inch diameter limit and the riparian area protections that we got through those negotiations were arguably the most outstanding long-term accomplishments we've had, as they affected six national forests, limiting and stopping the rampant logging of large and old trees. During the COVID pandemic in 2021, the Region 6 of the Forest Service, which is in the Pacific Northwest, decided to ram through an amendment to eliminate the 21-inch limit that applied to all the Blue Mountains National Forests in eastern Oregon. They changed the legal enforceable standard of not logging above 21 inches diameter at breast height to a voluntary guideline that would inevitably result in wholesale logging of large trees on a landscape scale with virtually every timber sale. This is what's been proposed in almost every timber sale since this change. Inevitably, the barrage of large tree logging would also remove many old growth trees, contrary to their rhetoric about managing to retain old growth trees under this amendment. However, Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project challenged the amendment of the 21-inch cutting limit, quickly followed by a group of multiple organizations also challenging the decision. And so far, a magistrate and Judge Aiken have made good rulings, including the ruling to vacate the amendment itself, which should reinstate the 21-inch limit for logging by the Forest Service until at least the Forest Service appeals the decision or prepares an environmental impact statement.
BMBP's fieldwork relies really heavily on volunteers coming out every year to help survey every single area of a proposed timber sale, measure trees, profile the forest, document wildlife. So I was hoping that we could talk a little bit about what it is that volunteers do when they come out, what a typical day in the field looks like. And I'll mention a little bit about how to get involved in this year's field season, which is just around the corner. So do you need to be a trained ecologist to help BMBP defend the forest?
Not at all. I'm not a trained ecologist either. Although I have a lot of naturalist experience over the years. But volunteers get trained by either me or an experienced volunteer, usually for at least 3 days. An ordinary day field surveying is we eat breakfast together and we figure out where we're going on the map and who's going out with whom. We hike through the proposed sale areas. We measure large trees and slope steepness and canopy closure and take notes and photographs to document wildlife signs, unusual plants, tree species composition and structure, steep slopes, stream conditions, scenic views, signs of recreational use, things like that. And we hike all day, but we're not hiking very fast. We're taking notes and photographs, which makes it more accessible for a lot of people. We eat lunch in the field or at the truck, and then we field survey in the afternoon, then return at least 2 hours before dark to have dinner together.
I want to say, as someone who's been going back every summer for about 10 years, it's really impactful to experience these forests directly. Sometimes it's like being in an incredibly wild place, untouched cathedral old growth forest that's under threat. Sometimes it's surveying an area that's already been deeply damaged by multiple logging cycles, and you're really seeing what that impact means. On the ground is this really undeniable immersive education in the meaning of forest management policy and in forest ecology with the incredible tutelage of Karen. So it's this really important opportunity. I think I really want to encourage anyone interested to pursue volunteering. You can find details about how to volunteer, how to get in touch with Karen via the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project website, bmbp.org. Again, the summer field season is coming up, so we're looking for volunteers. So as we close our program on Earth Day, I was hoping to ask you, Karen, if you have a favorite memory or two of field surveying wild places with BMBP that you'd like to share that stuck with you, an encounter with wildlife, a special place while you've been doing this work.
Yes, Earth Day is actually my birthday. I would love to claim responsibility for that, but I was 12 during the first Earth Day, but I was involved on the first Earth Day. A lot of my favorite memories from field surveying, there's been incredible numbers of special places, but a lot of the memories that are outstanding for me are the wildlife observations. For instance, Sophie and I both saw a wolf for the first time in Eastern Oregon in the Ochoco, a big black wolf. It was amazing. And then I've seen martens twice in very fleeting glimpses. They're very fast. And a volunteer and I watched a Pacific fisher run right along a big old growth Douglas fir log right in front of us when they weren't even known to exist there in the Ochoco. However, even more special are my experiences with the way I've been able to relate to wildlife species. Once I saw a black bear clearly daydreaming as it walked straight towards me, towards my truck, actually, with its eyes wide open and didn't even see it until I clicked the camera and then it freaked out and noticed me. And then I also saw a coyote walking straight towards me and my dog when field surveying. And we were in pretty much plain sight, and it had its eyes open, looking straight at us, and didn't see us because it was daydreaming. So it's just lovely to realize that animals daydream and dream and think and have emotions and all of that.
Thank you so much, Karen Coulter, for joining us today. Again, everyone, please visit bmbp.org to learn about how to volunteer with the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project doing important forest defense work this summer. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to Field Notes. This is Sophie Smith signing off for the wild.